Hello and welcome to the Indiana University Press Podcast. I'm your host, Laura Bache. On this episode, I speak with writer Robin Hemley. Robin is the director of the nonfiction writing program at the University of Iowa and author of two books for IU Press. We've recently reissued his novel, The Last Studebaker, and this June we'll publish Reply All, a collection of his short stories.
Well, I'd like to start out by talking with you about your book, Reply All. It's a collection of short stories on the art of deception. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and why you're interested in writing about deception?
Well, I don't know that I'm particularly interested in writing about deception. It's just that the stories sort of turned out that way to be about self-deception. I mean, I think that everyone is a mass of contradictions, and that's one of the things that a short story writer or a novelist, you know, exploits in his or her work, the way people say one thing and do another, or think they're good but then do something that they thought they would never do before. And, you know, with the title story, Reply All, I wrote it actually around the time, I wrote it several years ago when people were being rather injudicious with their email and sometimes would hit Reply All by mistake, as I did once, but it was a fairly innocent Reply All, even though it was a little embarrassing. But when I thought about it, I thought, well, what would be the worst case scenario for such a thing? Because I feel that with email, you know, people send out things sometimes in email before they've considered them. And it's almost like mind reading, you know, this sort of unadulterated way in which people's real thoughts about other people come across. So that suggested itself, and I just went with it, and the situation just snowballed and snowballed until it became a real disaster. And I think that's the way I operate in many ways, by taking situations and putting roadblocks, and often the roadblocks that I put in front of my characters are self-imposed.
And I don't want to give away too much about the Reply All story that's included in the book, but it's hilarious, and it is, like you were saying, the most embarrassing situation ever just put out there. So I thought you did a really good job capturing that and the horror and shock, and like my eyes should not be reading this.
Right, I know. Well, it's funny because since that time, since I wrote that book, when I read that story out loud, people have come up to me and told me about situations that were pretty similar, and I was really surprised that it's actually happened in real life, things almost, or even as bad, if not worse, than what my story was.
And my next question for you is, how did you decide which stories to include in the Reply All collection?
Well, it was difficult. It wasn't an easy decision because I have more stories than are in the collection, but I showed it to various people and got their reactions, my agent and friends, and they helped me decide which stories sort of fit a general theme, and because I do write a lot of different types of stories. I write in different voices, but I did want there to be some unity. I think a lot of the stories, not all of the stories, but a lot of the stories are humorous. And, you know, as we said, they involve this notion of self-deception.
Now, in addition to short stories, you've also written novels and nonfiction. What appeals to you about working in each of these genres? And do you have a preference for a particular genre?
I don't have a preference, except I think I love the short form. I like short stories a lot. This is my third collection. I love reading short stories. I think it's a really vibrant form. It's, you know, an American form first theorized by Edgar Allan Poe when he was reviewing Hawthorne's work. And I love the form. I think that a really fine short story is as good as a wonderful poem. But I love all the genres. My parents were both writers. My father was a poet and novelist and translator and publisher, and my mother was a short story writer and novelist. I grew up in this multi-genre family, so I never felt as though I had to declare loyalty to one genre or the other. I like writing essays, I like writing memoir, and like writing investigative journalism. and stories and novels because they exercise different parts of my curious mind, different ways to engage with the world and different ways to think about problems of human existence.
And now I'd like to talk with you for a little bit about your novel, The Last Studebaker. Can you tell us what this book is about?
Well, I lived for a while in South Bend, Indiana, as a high school student in the mid-1970s, and this was the place where the Studebaker plant had its headquarters until it folded in 1963, and it was, I think, the fifth largest automaker in the world at the time, right after the big three, and then maybe one other. And when it left South Bend, it just left very quickly. There were suicides, divorces, people lost their pensions. It was one of the early collapses of, it was almost like the canary in the coal mine in terms of U.S. Industry. And so when I was there, it was still very much a wound in the collective psyche of the community. And I wanted to write about the aftermath of a company that really thought of itself as a family company. I mean, it had actually been around for over 100 years. It started as a wagon maker and was the only company to make a transition from making wagons, the largest wagon maker in the world, to automobiles. So it lasted for over 100 years and was a very successful company for many years and was owned by the Studebaker brothers. And they were very concerned with projecting this image of a family-owned company and of loyalty. But in the end, they just ditched all their employees. And it was an illustration to me of how people can be loyal to an institution, but institutions rarely show loyalty to the people. And so that's what I wanted to explore in that book. And I did it, you know, not in a completely grim way. I mean, it's actually a pretty funny book, I think. It's about this woman named Lois, and she's a divorced mom with two daughters, and they get this guy who's a little unhinged who becomes a kind of accidental tenant of theirs. And it's about the way families fall apart and come together again in configurations that are odd but sometimes work.
And you were just talking about how living in South Bend, that figured into The Last Studebaker. And I'm wondering how often you draw upon your own life experiences for your writing and how do you develop them into good stories?
Well, I actually wrote a book about this called Turning Life into Fiction, and I've thought a lot about it. I do use my life, but not only my life. There's a way in which you use a mixture of your memory, your imagination, and your observations to create fiction. There's always a kind of transformation process. So I have stories that are really absurd, really out there, but there's some kernel of experience in them. So with The Last Studebaker, there's no character who's really based on me or my experiences per se. There's a lot of garage sales in the book, and I've always loved going to garage sales. And the main character, yeah, and the main character, Lois, is kind of based on an old friend of mine who had five daughters, and who I used to go to a lot of garage sales with, and her, and so she was kind of transformed into, you know, she's definitely not the person I knew, but she's kind of based on her. So I used her situation a little bit in the book. And as I said with Reply All, you know, that was based on a really mild example of that in my own life. And then I just, you know, pumped it up and made it much stronger. So that's always the difficulty, the challenge, is to take something from your own life and then not imagine it as it really happened, but what if this happened and this happened and this happened? It's a big difference between writing that and, say, writing nonfiction, where, you know, you're not supposed to do that. you don't take something that's based on what happened to you and then and then make exaggerate it, because then you're James Fry.
And a few moments ago, you were talking about how you grew up in a writing household, so I can definitely see that your parents have had an influence on your writing, but I'm wondering what other authors have had an influence on your work?
Well, I have been influenced by many writers. Not all of their influence shows in my work, but there are, I mean, I love writers like Franz Kafka, Jorge Luis Borges. I also love writers like Flannery O'Connor, Graham Greene, the Southern writer Walker Percy, my teacher Barry Hanna. They all have had, oh, and Grace Paley, the wonderful short story writer Grace Paley, they've all had an influence on me in some way or another, either as teachers or as writers or as teacher writers. You know, so they've all had some influence on me, and I look to their work always for inspiration.
And you're a teacher yourself of writing. You're at the University of Iowa. What advice do you give to your students about writing?
Well, I would say that the most common advice that's given to everyone, and that people really always should heed, though they find it difficult to heed, is that the best teacher is really reading. The best writers are the best readers. It's just, it's almost an incontrovertible fact. The people who say they only want to write but don't read voraciously typically don't produce good work, because they don't really know what's come before, and they're not inspired by the words of others. I see writing and literature as a long conversation that you're having with other authors, both alive and dead. And I also tell people that they really need to write every day. I mean, this is something that was drummed into me, even if it's only 200 words. But that sort of habit of writing is really important. You can't just write out of inspiration. You have to work towards inspiration, because, you know, to sustain any kind of project, you need a lot of persistence and that sort of everydayness of making it not just a thing you want to do, but something that you pretty much have to do. So that's, you know, that's what I tell my students. I also tell my students that self-doubt is a part of it, and people often doubt their abilities and doubt that they have a good story to write, but, you know, they have to push through those doubts, and even if it's not working, to then, you know, rewrite and try to make it better. Because when I was a young writer, like a lot of my students, I liked writing first drafts and hated rewriting. Really didn't know how to rewrite. And as I've gotten older, it's reversed. I actually, it's the opposite. I like to rewrite much more than I like to do a first draft, because I think that the art is really in the rewriting, in the revision.
And we were talking about reading. So what books are you reading right now?
I'm reading on my Kindle, basically. I'm reading a couple of books. I read every night to my 9-year-old daughter, so we're about 50 pages into Great Expectations right now. So we're reading some Dickens, and then I'm also reading for my own pleasure Marcel Proust, Swan's Way, because it's such a gorgeous book. And then I'm reading a lot of student papers beyond that. And
of course.
I have a lot of books on my shelf right now that I want to get to. My friends, of course, a lot of my friends are writers, and they have books that I really want to read. So, I'm always behind.
Yeah, me too. I'm always reading. I'm like you. I'm always reading to my daughters. I'm reading a lot of books to her, and then I'm reading a lot of books for work. And then I have a few books that I can read for pleasure. But my list keeps growing and growing and growing, and I don't think I'll ever get through it.
Yeah, no, I won't either. But I'm looking forward to the summer. You know, in the summer, maybe I'll have some more time.
And finally, my last question for you is, what are you writing right now?
I'm in the middle of a novel. I'm about 225 pages into a novel that's set in the Philippines, where I've spent a lot of time and have written about before. But I've only written nonfiction. Well, actually, two of my stories in Reply All are set in the Philippines, too. One from the point of view of a translator on Magellan's voyage, and one about a couple of misguided business people in the Philippines. So I'm writing a longer work. I'm writing a novel right now and really enjoying it, which is good because one of the things you have to battle as a writer is your own boredom and frustration with a project. So the fact that I'm still excited about it, 225 pages in, feels good.
Well, Robin, those are the questions I have for you. So thanks a lot for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for talking with me. I really enjoyed it, and I'm excited about the book coming out. So thank you.
For more information on Robin's books, The Last Studebaker and Reply All, visit the IU Press website at iupress.indiana.edu.